Judge Werke, Chief Judge Siegel, Judge Cleary, the Honorable Renee Werke presiding.
Good morning. Go ahead and take a seat. I'll ask our marshal to call the next case for consideration.
Case number 822-1039, Bachman versus Commissioner of Public Safety.
Please announce who you're speaking on behalf of and your name when you approach a podium. Pick any podium you wish. The one in the middle does go up and down. And 15 minutes, of course, for your argument, 5 minutes reserved for rebuttal to appellant counsel.
Thank you. Morning. May it please the court. My name is Rod Sheeta, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Kimberly Bachman. So of course, this is a stop issue, single issue with some, I guess, multi-faceted issues within, but the backbone of the case is, we believe, the controlling case of the Supreme Court in 1971 in Pogels. Our view is that the law coming from that case does not favor a lighted turn signal over an arm and hand signal, even at nighttime. And so the issue in this case became whether there was reasonable, articulable suspicion concerning the lack of an arm signal. And then the issue becomes whether there was a mistake of fact as found by the trial court. So turning to the issue of whether the officer provided a reasonable suspicion of a lack of an arm signal, the trooper.
That's your problem, because the court said the officer is credible. So I think that is your biggest problem by far, is when you have a district court who has the discretion making that determination. How do we set that aside?
Well, it's not a credibility determination in this case in our viewpoint. So we have one piece of direct evidence in the transcript, and that is direct evidence. Of course, is hard to come by, right? But we have in this case the troopers saying that the entirety of his observation for the alleged traffic stop violation was in fact that he did not see a flashing illuminated turn signal.
Counsel, I understand your argument under 16919, but the transcript goes on at various times where the officer, who, as Judge Werke pointed out, was found credible, said, I stopped the vehicle for not signaling its turn. I didn't observe anything indicating that the vehicle was turning. I did not witness any signal to turn. I didn't physically see the driver at all till I'd gotten to the window, which would seem to indicate that he didn't see an arm. At no point did I see the driver at all until I reached the window to speak with the occupant, basically. So again, it looks as though it came in by virtue of the fact that he didn't see the driver, therefore he didn't see the arm of the driver.
Right. So we would harken back to, first, we have the direct evidence, as I pointed out, the entirety of his observation. We know that. Very hard to come by that kind of direct evidence. I think it's maybe the clearest case of direct evidence I've had in a stop issue, where the officer articulates what the entirety of his observation is, and he keeps referring to the lack of the illuminated turn signal. So we have to look at the rest of the transcript, as the court's pointing out. We believe there's at least 7 or 8 different times which are sort of circumstantial evidence which actually support this direct evidence that his only observation, his only articulation, was that the vehicle failed to show that turn signal. In fact, there's a couple of different points in the transcript. And so beyond making the argument that there was a lack of an articulation, if we want to really parse the transcript, we can look at the one in the criminal case, which is part of the evidence here. The prosecutor asks, you indicated that you didn't see the vehicle make any sort of turn signal. So there, he's got the opportunity, right, to say what that means. He says, no, ma'am, the light was not blinking or illuminated, indicating that the vehicle was going to turn, period. He does it again in the civil hearing. It's a little bit lengthy, and I know the court can read the transcript, but I'd like to point it out. So he says, so I don't remember the exact way you asked it in the criminal case, but it was similar to that question. I mean, I basically stopped the vehicle for not signaling its turn. I didn't observe anything indicating that the vehicle was turning. And his very next sentence is, I didn't observe the vehicle's blinking light. And I say, all right, that's sufficient. And so do you recall you would agree that the entirety of the observation then for your violation was failing to see on the vehicle a flashing illuminated turn signal? And he says, yes, yes. So this dovetails perfectly with the direct evidence that we already have. His testimony is candid. His sole articulation is to the blinker. And if we have 10 references to the blinker, even when he has the opportunity to tell us what he means by any signal, and he does that, but we have 10 references to the blinker and nothing to an arm and hand signal. So I think that it's, the only thing we can read from this is that he had no ability to see what was going on in the driver window area, or he paid no attention to it, because his answer is, of course.
So the point of signaling a turn is not for the benefit of, I know how to signal a turn, it so that other drivers know what you're doing. So if this officer is following this car and sees no indication that this car, visible indication that this car is going to turn, why is that not adequate? I mean, that's what he testifies to. I didn't see anything to indicate that this car was going to turn. So even if she stuck her arm out, I guess if it's dark, I don't know. I don't want to go into that possibility. But he didn't see it. And that's the point of the whole statute, is to let other drivers know.
Well, and that's where I keep coming back to the statute, because I don't think it actually stands for that proposition. The court sort of talks about visibility, and then it cites subdivisions 4 through 7. But that doesn't give us any precise language in terms of what's at play in this case. So if we look at the arm signal is in subdivision 8, right? And it doesn't say anything about how visible it has to be to other people. There is a provision that talks about the visibility of lamps, blinkers, right? And that's a different statute, 169.57, which talks about that the blinkers, they're required to be visible to the front and rear. So I don't think we can borrow that statute and bring it over into subdivision 8 in 169.19, where the legislature's talking about arm and hand signals. If they wanted them to be visible in the same way as lamps and blinkers, they could have said that, but they did not. And so we can't borrow the statute. But again, as I say in my brief, even if we borrow that visibility provision concerning blinkers or lighted blinkers, that actually talks about visibility to the front and rear. And this officer was off to the side, so he would have needed to say that, I suspect that even though I was on the side, if I had been behind her, I would have made the same observation of a lack of any kind of signal. And, of course, we don't have that, because the only thing we have in the record is the direct evidence that the entirety of his observation was the lack of the illuminated light.
So one more question is, reasonable suspicion is a pretty low standard. So the officer didn't have to know that there was a violation, just reasonably suspect that there was. So how was that? I mean, is there anything else you want to add in that regard to help us out here?
I do. One of the cases that the commissioner cites is the Johnson case, and the commissioner argues that this is a most apposite case, because it says that a police officer need not observe a traffic violation and needs only suspicion. However, if we read the rest of the language, even in Johnson, their cited case, it says that suspicion is not enough. It adds that the officer has to sufficiently, quote, sufficiently articulate, end quote, the factual basis for his or her suspicion. This is where Berge, I think, is very helpful and very instructive. The facts of Berge were that, the police officer inferred that the driver did not stop at the stop sign based on, apparently he couldn't see the driver for a brief distance. He was obstructed by something, I believe.
What about case law that says suspicion of a violation is sufficient?
Well, that's where Berge comes in, and Berge talks about assumptions in the same basket as suspicion. Suspicion by itself is the same as an assumption, and that doesn't get us the articulation requirement, doesn't get us the reasonable articulable suspicion. It doesn't meet the test in Terry. So the stop must be based on facts available to the officer at the time of the seizure, but more importantly, to the court's question, we have to have belief, the officer's objective belief, of a violation reasonably inferable from what the officer observed and saw, and that's Berge. So here the officer told us 10 times what he saw and even gave us direct evidence of what he saw. And he articulated that he did not see an illuminated turn signal, and that was the entirety of his observation. So at that point, the commissioner's in the position of having to say, well, we've impeached our own officer. That's really, that direct evidence, yeah, he gave that, but we later impeached him. But the commissioner points to one question, that is, you know, to clarify, you didn't see any indication the vehicle was going to turn. First of all, this is not a clarification. The officer's statement, the direct evidence, is completely unequivocal. We don't need any clarification as to what the entirety of the testimony meant in terms of his articulation. So I don't think we can sort of cast aside that direct evidence as to what the entirety of his observation was. We already know, so like I said, we point to direct evidence and 7 or 8 other things in the transcript. The commissioner points to this one question. But the officer answered that question at least a couple of times as to what he meant when asked about this any sort of turn signal. And he kept coming back to the blinker, at least on a couple of occasions. So that is not something that impeaches the direct evidence. It's a small, maybe the least significant piece of circumstantial evidence in the case, and it doesn't work to strike down in the least the direct evidence that we have. And so all this other testimony, we believe, dovetails perfectly with his candid testimony that the sole articulation was related to the blinker. I don't think we gave the trooper, you know, really enough credit. I think that we looked at what he said and decided that, no, your entirety of the observation wasn't really what you said it was. It was something different. But the trooper is the one who is experienced. He's the one that's trained. And he gave us the direct evidence as to what his observation was. And he articulated it in court, and not once did he say anything about an ability to see the driver area, the ability, or that he actually even paid attention.
I don't know that you're characterizing that correct. He said he didn't see anything of this person, no arm, no head, or anything, until he approached the vehicle and the window rolled down.
Well, that would be again the same as if, ultimately he, you know, probably looked at Ms. Bachman's driver's license. So we make the argument there, the analogy there, that he didn't see a valid driver's license from his position, you know, 800 feet away on the side either. So he would have answered that question the same way, right? You know, did you see any sign that he had a valid driver's license or that she had a valid driver's license? Of course, the answer would have been no. But the answer no doesn't really articulate anything. It's the insufficient articulation under Terry. So we have to go back to the direct evidence and determine whether or not that was impeached at some point in time. And all of his answers are in lockstep with the direct evidence in the case. What we're doing there is we're substituting our own, and this kind of gets to the video a little bit, because the trial court indicates that it did sort of an independent viewing of the video. But we know, what did the trial court look at in independently viewing the video? It looked in the area of the driver's window, and the court is independently saying, well, I don't see any evidence of an arm and hand signal there. But the officer didn't say that he did. And so that is not using a video to credit or discredit a police officer. It's being used to substitute the trial court's assessment of the facts of the situation. And that's not permissible. Again, it's the officer who has to present the objective belief based on the facts available to the officer at the time of the stop. And so it doesn't corroborate, the video doesn't corroborate anything, because the officer, based on his answers, we don't know whether he had an ability or paid any attention to that driver window area based on the entire record, if we even ignore the direct evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chita. Commissioner?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Nicholas Moen. I'm here on behalf of the respondent to ask that this court sustain the ruling of the district court in this case. I want to start with your question, Judge Werke, about how can appellant get by the credibility determination of the court in this case, which ties into the last argument appellant was making. Appellant asserts that the commissioner is relying on one question in the transcript, which was an attempt at clarification. This is not correct. If we look at page 8 of the transcript, the initial statement of the officer, as has been noted by your honors this morning, was that he didn't see anything indicating a stop. I didn't see a blinking light. Appellant then comes after that and very pointedly does not ask, did you see an arm signal? He simply asks, is the sole entirety of your observations that a blinking light was not observed? The officer says, yes, trooper, excuse me. And then the clarifying question comes in. Again, the trooper states, yes, I didn't see anything indicating a turn. So this definitely was a credibility determination by the court. It's a factual conclusion. It should not be overturned unless it was clearly erroneous. It's not clearly erroneous because there's nothing in the record to indicate that an arm signal occurred or that the trooper did not see a blinking turn signal not occur. There's nothing here that undercuts the credibility of this trooper's testimony. And the court not only found it credible, but supported this testimony by its own independent analysis of the squad footage. And the appellant counsel's argument about how the court is using the video footage is entirely incorrect. First of all, it's in evidence. It's an exhibit. The district court is free to look at it as a piece of evidence and make factual conclusions from it, which is what it did. Additionally, it is not being used by the court in an attempt to, as opposing counsel puts it in his argument, supplement an admission of testimony. The trooper testified that I didn't see anything indicating a turn. The court was examining the footage and found that that was a credible statement and supported by the video footage. Judge Siegel, you asked about the reasonable articulable suspicion standard and that this is a low standard. And this is correct. We only have to look at the Pike case, which was cited by the district court. A violation doesn't have to be detectable. You just need suspicion of a violation, and that's what we have here. And we can even look at the Johnson case as well. The trooper did offer a credible factual articulation supporting his suspicion. He said, I didn't see anything signaling a turn. I didn't see a blinking light. And importantly, there's nothing appellant can cite to as an authority that a peace officer has to testify to all possible ways that a signal could occur and that they did not happen in order to support reasonable suspicion. He just needs to have reasonable suspicion and he needs to articulate why he had it. The trooper did that in this case. He said, I didn't see a signal. I didn't see a blinking light. That is sufficient. Judge Siegel, you also asked why no indication in and of itself is not adequate. And opposing counsel, you asked specifically about the statute, and opposing counsel said we don't have specific language in the statute. I would disagree with that. If we look at 169.19 subdivision 7, it states, quote, the signals herein required shall be given either by means of the hand and arm or by a signal lamp or signal device. But when a vehicle is so construed or loaded that a hand and arm signal would not be visible in normal sunlight, and at night, both to the front and rear of such vehicle, then the signals must be given by such a lamp or device. I think this subdivision of the statute is directly saying that signals need to be visible. Appellant relies upon two cases in his brief in chief and his reply brief, Poehler and Sarber. and attempts to analogize these to the present circumstance. Neither of those is applicable. In Polar, it's about a cracked windshield, and there are two components of a violation there. You have to have a crack, and it has to obscure vision. The court was saying that the officer articulated there was a crack, but not that it obscured vision. In Sarber, it was similar. It was about high beams, and you have two components of a violation there. The high beams have to be on within the prescribed range, and they have to have actually visually blinded and impaired the oncoming driver. So there are, again, two components. Here, there's just one component of a violation. Was the turn signaled or not? The fact that you can signal a turn in multiple different ways doesn't make this a Polar or Sarber case. It's just, did the person signal, did they not? There are not multiple components of that signal violation. There's just different ways you can signal a turn. Polar and Sarber are not applicable. And then finally, appellant in his reply brief states that the commissioner and district court seem to be implying that arm signals should not be used that night, which is contrary to the case he cites to Pogles. I apologize, I can't remember how it's pronounced. This is not correct. You can look at the district court's order. You can look at respondent's brief. Neither makes that assertion. We are simply pointing out that appellant's assertion made in his brief that the video footage is too dark to see what is happening indicates that even if an arm signal might have been made, it wouldn't have been visible as required by the statute. And it also ties into the mistake of fact situation where, as the district court noted, absolute worst case scenario here, we have a mistake of fact, which does not invalidate a reasonable articulable suspicion for an investigatory stop if the mistake was made in good faith, which it would have been here. But again, as the district court noted right after saying that on the last page of its order, there is nothing in the record to indicate that an arm signal occurred or that the a signal occurred. The record indicates that a lane change, a turn was made without signaling, which is a statutory violation, providing reasonable articulable suspicion. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this point. If not, I would close my argument and ask that this court sustain the revocation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mullen. Mr. Uchida, you have the last word.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just know briefly, I think we can really cast aside this requirement in the statute about lamps, blinkers. There's another way to comply with the law. This Minnesota Supreme Court told us that in 1971. It works at nighttime. It's an arm and hand signal. So we really shouldn't get too caught up in this notion about the blinker. We can put the blinker out of the analysis and look at the testimony and determine whether or not the officer or the trooper sufficiently articulated that issue of the arm and hand signal, because it's an alternative way to comply with the law. So for example, if, you know, to enter a park, if you're required to have decal either on the front windshield or the rear windshield, and the trooper made a mistake, thought it had to be in the rear window, and he says, well, it wasn't in the rear window, that was the entirety of my observation. Of course he's gonna answer the question, so you didn't see any required decal. He's going to say yes.
So, I'm sorry, I want to backtrack a little bit. So are you suggesting we just read subdivision 7 out of the statute?
Well, when there's the possibility of an arm and hand signal, yes, it's an alternative manner.
You mean you're saying that it should have been visible so it was okay? I mean, I don't, how are you reading subdivision 7? How are you reading that?
So subdivision 7 is the subdivision 8 is the one, of course, that talks about arm and hand signals, right? And that it's an alternative to the lighted blinker. And so I'm focusing on subdivision 8 because the legislature...
Yeah, but we read statutes in their entirety. Subdivision 7 literally says, and at night, then the signals must be given by such a lamp or device. I don't know how we get around that.
Well, that's the Minnesota Supreme Court decided that
in 1971. That was the argument that they rejected in Polgals.
Okay, all right.
So this has been the precedent since 1971. There's been 50 years that the legislature could have sought to additionally regulate arm and hand signals. To this point, it has not happened. And so the arm and hand signal remains a viable manner in which to signal, even at nighttime. The direct evidence, of course, the circumstantial evidence, all supports the officer had no ability or paid no attention to the area of the driver window. And it's understandable because it was dark. He articulated nothing in terms of what happened in that driver window area. He needed to do that. He didn't have to know that there was a violation. He didn't have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt with his objective facts, but he did have to articulate that in court and have an objective belief such that any police officer would have made the same determination based on the assessment that he made. But he didn't make any assessment of an arm and hand signal, nothing, in terms of what happened in that driver window area. And so with that, it fails the Terry standard. And we're asking that this court reverse the trial court as a result. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both attorneys for appearing today, arguing in support of your briefing. The matter is deemed submitted. A decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe.